The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boot.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talked the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast.
I know that we're all about college football here on this show, and it's our number one sport, which is fine. I think we all love college football. You can't go wrong with it. But I will say, though, that the NFL playoffs have not disappointed so far. I mean, they've been really great.
This weekend didn't disappoint.
Right.
I mean, divisional weekend.
Yeah. The first weekend, though, of playoffs, though, were some great games. Great. Yeah, wild cards were great.
Divisional round was not great. Yesterday was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, two
tremendous day of football.
Two overtime games. I mean, you can't ask anything for more. But now the Super Bowl is set with the Patriots and the Rams meeting in Atlanta for Super Bowl 53. And it just seems like with the ways those games went yesterday, it's kind of like, okay, yeah, we get that these two teams are in it, but I don't really know if this doesn't feel right.
Well,
that these two teams are in it.
Well, there's a lot of reasons at the end of the New Orleans.
Lots of controversy.
Rams game, the Saints Rams game, that you feel that way. We'll talk about that in the no call. And then the fact that Mahomes never got on the field in overtime. I mean, there's just a lot to work through in the conversation this morning concerning these two games, rules. The way we go about determining a winner in extra time, you do feel a bit unsatisfied. But I do think because of where we live, almost perfectly tucked between Kansas City and New Orleans, and there's passionate fans for both of those teams in our audiences this morning that are heartbroken because of the way the games ended. New Orleans fans feel cheated, and I'm sure to a degree, the Chiefs fans feel that way as well because the best quarterback they've seen, I guess, since Joe Montana,
yeah,
when he played briefly for the Chiefs, is never got to touch the football in overtime. And then there's the whole other reason why it even went to overtime we'll get to with an offside. So, you know, it's just but it was a tremendous day of watching football yesterday.
Yeah, and it had so much controversy. And it is funny, though, because last week I put up the poll question here on the show of asking everybody, which Super Bowl matchup do you want the most? There were four different options. 5% of the people, the least amount, said Patriots and Rams.
Yeah, nobody wanted this. Nobody here.
No.
Now, TV executives, people that, you know, are trying to draw the biggest audience, not like the Super Bowl has a problem getting an audience to begin with.
No.
This is great because you got the entire Northeast and the Boston market and all, you know, Patriot Nation's large up there. And then you've got all of L.A., which I don't know if they care about football or not there. Maybe this will bring them in.
Yeah. Well, if you have a team in the Super Bowl, that at least can help the cause a little bit if you're in L.A., but you know, just from my perspective, too, and watching these games, because obviously I wasn't rooting for any particular game or any particular team. I just want to see good games, and I think we all got that, too. But the problem is that when you see these games and these matchups, you see everything's magnified. I mean, completely. And you mentioned the offsides call that then led to overtime there in the Chiefs game. And just how, because Tom Brady threw an interception that play. That he lined up offsides. And if that call would have stand, you would have had the Chiefs in the Super Bowl. And it's the same thing with the missed pass interference call. If that would have been called, then Drew Brees and the Saints could have run another minute and a half off the clock, kicked a field goal, and at best case scenario for the Rams, they would have had 15, 20 seconds left on the clock. So you would presumably think that it's not going overtime.
I'm not even sure they'd have got the ball back.
Yeah. So, I mean, it would have been really tough for them to even be in it after that. And it just is amazing how I think it was Al Pacino said it best in any given Sunday. Football is a game of inches. And it's just literally those smallest of things make all the difference in the world. We could have a completely different Super Bowl matchup.
So you want to dive into it here or do you want to wait?
I mean, we can dive in.
Do you want to talk a little Hog basketball?
Well, I was going to bring up the Hog basketball too. We'll save that NFL talk for later.
But I want to talk about the missed call.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, we'll really get into that missed call too. But Arkansas basketball, in case you weren't able to check it out. They lose another one. Four straight for the Arkansas Razorback basketball team on the road against Ole Miss, 84-67. So it wasn't even like this game was close. Mm-hmm. And we know that Ole Miss has been surging. They've been a team that surprised a lot of people and how good they are. I believe they were picked as a last or at least close to last as far as
at the bottom.
Yeah, I mean, Kermit Davison's new first year. They've surprised a lot of people. So going on the road, it's not necessarily surprising to see Arkansas lose, but in the fashion that they've lost, I don't believe this team's getting better. In fact, it looks like they are starting to get worse. They're starting to look very lost offensively, which I know that a lot of people probably make the jokes where it's like, yeah, well, you don't run plays. Yeah, I know. But even then, even in Arkansas's time, especially during the earlier parts of the season, they at least looked like they were running a semblance of offense. It looks like they were at least doing some things to have it. But when I'm looking at this box score, and no offense, but when I see that Embry Simpson and Gabe Osaboyan are the two leading scorers for the Arkansas Razorback basketball team, I feel like there's probably a problem with that. Nothing against those two guys. But when two of your bench players, who neither of them are known for their scoring ability, especially Gabe Osaboyan, and they have more points than Daniel Gafford, than Mason Jones, than Isaiah Joe, than Jalen Harris, than anybody else, that's a problem. And Daniel Gafford got six shots in this game. Six.
Yeah.
Granted, he didn't play the best of games. He went 2 of 6, had 9 points, 10 rebounds. He had 5 turnovers in this game, so it wasn't a great game by him. But it just seems like what is the game plan here? What is Arkansas trying to do in these games? Are they trying to get the ball more to Gafford? Are they trying to run a different offensive set each game? I mean, what is going on? Because I watched this game, and I feel like Arkansas has talent. They have ability. They have guys that can score. They have, and even these guys have had some bad games. Like Mason Jones went 1 of 10 from the field, 0 of 6 from 3-point line. Like, guys have bad games, and I get that. But it's just when you watch this, and especially in the past 4 games when they've lost 4 straight, it leaves you scratching your head and saying, What is this team's goal? What's their objective? What are they trying to accomplish? Because I can't figure out. Listen, when the Razorback football team was playing this past season, they were 2-10. Kind of felt the same way at times where I'm like, what are they trying to do?
What's going on here?
Yeah, what's the overall philosophy here? How are they trying to win games? Because whatever they're trying to do is not working, but I can't even see what they're trying to do. Now, I'm kind of starting to feel that way with the basketball team where I don't know what really they're trying to do. They're not really trying to run an offense through Gafford. They're not really trying to run an offense where Jalen Harris dishes the ball out. They're not trying to run it through Mason. I just really don't know what they're doing. And maybe it's because I'm not as basketball savvy as a lot of people, and I know we'll have Nick Mason throughout this week. I'm sure we'll talk to him. He knows a lot more about it than I do. But when I just watched it, I'm like, I don't know what's going on.
Ultimately, I think they want to try and feed the ball to Gafford and see if they can score as many points as they can there. Now, the idea, some people have this idea that, well, Mike should sit over on the bench and hold up 2 fingers or 4 fingers or hey, run number 1, run number 4. That's not the way it's done anymore. That's also not to say you don't have set plays either. You don't have an offense. And it doesn't seem like there is an organized motion to what is going on out there. It is a lot more freestyle than what I think a lot of fans are comfortable with. And there was a statement from Bobby Portis about the differences in his college playing days and in pro playing days. And he laid it out that in college, there really wasn't a lot of organized offense was the crux of what he was saying in a statement I read online this weekend. That it was about just trying to get him the ball one way or another.
Or Michael Qualls or something
It to Qualls. It was Qualls or him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So it has that kind of feel that there is a lack of organization or a lack of here's the plan when we come up the floor. When we cross half court, here is the plan and how we want to get the ball in the basket on this trip.
Mm-hmm. Well, because here's the thing, and I've said this in the previous weeks, that there is nothing sexier than seeing Arkansas and the team and what they're trying to do run smoothly, run beautifully. When it's the high flying, up and down, good defense, hitting threes and dunks, it's beautiful. It's so much fun to watch. But I think what the problem that fans have, and a lot of people have with what's going on with Mike right now and this team, is that they'll see, okay, what you want to do or what you say you want to do is not working. Mm-hmm. This team is keeping you from doing it. What's your response to that? And there's not one.
Right.
There's not something, there's not a fallback plan. There's not an adjustment. There's not plan B where it's like, okay, they're stopping us here. So let's shift it all around. Let's make these adjustments and let's go do this. There's not that. So when you just when you're one trick pony and you don't have a backup plan, these are the types of games that you see, because you're going to go up against teams and go up against coaches that go in with a game plan to stop you. Go in with film and say, hey, Daniel Gafford does this, Isaiah Joe does this, let's do these things. And then when those things don't work, you're the one that has to come up with a response. And I don't think they have one right now.
Right.
So it's just, it's really problematic. And you really wonder, where's the turnaround going to, when's it going to happen? Is it going to happen? Is it going to be this season? Is it going to be next year, the year after that? When is it all going to get better for Arkansas basketball? Because right now, it's looking pretty bad, and I think a lot of fans would agree on that, too.
Follow the show on Twitter, at HitThatLineAR. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Now he does a tightrope back. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs!
I want to get into Razorback basketball, but I had to throw this stat out for you. This is something I just saw on Twitter. Tom Brady has appeared in more Super Bowls than any other NFL franchise.
Well, they've been in, what, 9 of the last 18?
So. He's been in 9. The Steelers have been in 8 Super Bowls. The Cowboys have been in 8. The Broncos have been in 8. Tom Brady alone has been in more Super Bowls.
And obviously,
than any other franchise.
The Patriots as well.
Well, right. Yeah, of course. But just for one single quarterback to do that.
I understand. Yeah.
I mean, that's as impressive as it can be.
Forget about Super Bowls and, I mean, in AFC championship games. That's, what, not 8 straight now on that? That they played in the AFC championship game 8 straight years?
Yep.
That's but just stupid. for a franchise, like you said, I mean, the point you're trying to make here is, the same starting, and I know he hadn't started every game. There's been a knee injury along the way. There's been some seasons that were cut short. Those were usually the years, those were always the years they didn't make him out of the other half. But they're averaging, basically for the last 2 decades, 1 out of 2, and to think one quarterback could go this long, the longevity of the career. It's pretty amazing. The run him and Belichick have had together.
No, I mean, it's been nothing short of impressive, that's for sure.
The definition of dynasty.
And no doubt. No doubt. I mean, if he wins another one, though, he's going to have just as many titles as Jordan. So, got to start really putting him up there with the Mount Rushmore of all-time athletes coming out of the United States, that's for sure. So, but we'll talk about that later in the show as well. But I want to get into this Razorback basketball team and the fact that they have lost 4 straight games. Losing to Ole Miss 84-67 there in Oxford. Wasn't a pretty game. Arkansas never led. They were never really even close into the game. I think maybe the closest it got was 6 points in the second half. But 4 straight losses, 10-7 now Arkansas is, 1-4 in conference play. This game was just ugly from the get-go. And the fact that you had Embry-Simpson and Gabo Saboyan as your leading scorers in this game is, I think, just tells you all what you need to know about this game and how it went. Daniel Gafford had 9 points, only had 6 shots, he had 10 rebounds. Mason Jones went 1 of 10 from the field with 5 points. Isaiah Joe was 4 of 11 from the field. I mean, it just wasn't a pretty game across the board. Although, for some reason, Arkansas decided to shoot 17 of 21 from the free throw line, 81%. So, I guess there's your positive.
On a day where it made no difference.
Yeah, so I guess when there's no pressure, it doesn't matter. But
yeah, that's a good point. You kind of say that flippantly, but just to pause the conversation right there. When there's no pressure and it doesn't count, you think that's coincidence that they had better free throw shooting, or maybe they've been working? I don't know. That is an interesting point where you just kind of make a comment there, but stop and think about it. Does end of game pressure get to these teams when it comes to free throw shooting?
I mean, it is pretty amazing that in a game you have no pressure. when the game wasn't on the line, when one close, when you can go up and knock him down, especially somebody like Gabe Osaboyan going 3 of 4 from the free throw line. Daniel Gafford went 5 of 6.
Yeah.
The guy that's been the worst free throw shooter. You only missed one free throw. So it's just weird how that plays out. And, you know,
you're right.
It's very puzzling. But that's not the only thing that's puzzling about this team. This team, in general, is puzzling. I'm trying to figure out. I'm really trying. What this team is trying to do. What they're trying to accomplish. Do they have a game plan? If they do have a game plan, what is it? Because not just in the past 4 games where they've lost these games, but even in a few other games this season, you've watched a game and you feel like you know what a team or you know what certain players are capable of. You know that it's gonna or an offense is going to run through this guy. You feel like you know at some point, but then it all changes. And so when I watch these games, and the Ole Miss game was just the latest example, I'm sitting there and I'm just looking at it from the perspective of what is this team trying to do? We saw maybe with the football team. When you're watching these games and they're losing, you're like, what is this team? What is their goal?
Yeah.
What's their identity? It is non-existent. And I'm starting to feel that same way with this basketball team. Because before the season started, and even in the early going of the season, I think most of us would have felt like, okay, what this team needs to do, what's this team's strength, what it needs to be, is having Daniel Gafford and the offense revolve around him and have the other pieces come around him as well. And I think in some games you've seen that. But then there's a lot of other games where it just goes by the wayside and they start shooting a lot of threes. There's just no consistency. There's no identity. There's no game plan here. There's no adjustments being made. I'm just certainly wondering, and I know a lot of Razorback fans are too, now that you're on a 4-game losing skid, what is this team trying to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know.
In football, it's a lot easier. Or they pro-style offense. They a smash-mouth spread. Or they, you know, up-tempo. We talk about all these variations of offense. It's usually a lot easier to identify what you're all about. What's your identity? You know, in football, it's easy to kind of label them as what kind of football team you are. And we usually go spread or pro-style. That's kind of the two main categories. With this basketball team, what is the offensive identity? What are they all about?
All that we know is fast as 40 minutes. 40 minutes of
Okay, what does that mean?
But exactly, that's what I'm saying.
What does that mean?
Is it fair to say that talent sometimes overshadows coaching and makes up for... So, looking back at Nolan Richardson's tenure, he had a ton of talent, right?
Yes.
Tons.
Two different groups. He had, I hate to call them the triplets, but again, because lot of people did back in the day, but Todd Daley, Mayberry, and Oliver Miller were like another set of triplets from the late 70s and the Sutton days. Took him to a Final Four in 1990, and then, of course, he had Corliss Williamson and Scotty Thurman and Corey Beck and go down that group. So he had two really distinct groups of great talent, Final Four talent.
As Mike Anderson, even with a guy like Daniel Gafford, Bobby Portis, Barford Macon, would you say that they're even close to the realm that Nolan had?
No. Mm-hmm. No, because that's what it...
All of those guys, with the exception really of Thurman that I kind of listed there, were pro players.
Yeah.
And lengthy careers. I mean...
Well, and that's the thing, too, is that... A lot of them. And I think that's the thing that gets called back to a lot and looked back upon, is that you have guys that... Under Nolan, he had a system in place, and obviously the place worked, but he also had talent that go around with it. He had 5-star talent, bona fide NBA talent.
Well, and if you're going to play that style of offense, which under Nolan it worked,
the game was different.
Yeah, the game was different, but more towards the... I'm kind of skewing more towards the offense. If you're going to run that type of offense where it's just emotion based off the talent you guys have, based off the chemistry and whatnot, you got to have the players. And Arkansas, even with... guys like Barford, Macon, Gafford, Portis, they're still not in the same realm category as the guys that Nolan had.
But go back to what we're talking about there, that Nolan had, that Eddie Sutton had, both of those guys, Hall of Fame coaches.
But they had different styles of offenses, Tommy.
I understand it, but also the game was different in those two days, in those two eras of college basketball. My point is, both are Hall of Fame basketball coaches, right? So... I don't think anyone would say Mike Anderson at this point has earned the label of Hall of Fame. And can Arkansas get back there without two things? Hall of Fame coach, and it seems like the kind of the common denominator is you better have three guys that are pro-ready. Because you look at the way Sutton did it 40 years ago. You look at the way Nolan did it in 90, 94, 95. There's always three guys you could lean on, you could count on. And that just seems to be, if Arkansas is ever going to get there, they've got to have, like, another set of triplets of some sort.
Yeah.
A third set, you know.
Yeah. Well, and that's what it comes down to. Is because
a fourth set you might want to look at, you know, depending on how you categorize them.
I mean, it's talent.
It's talent, but it's not just one guy.
No.
And what Ty was trying to say, you've had times where it's been Portis or now Gafford, or you had Barford and Macon, but you never had three of them together at one point that were at that level.
You never had three bona fide NBA players.
That's the point, yeah. Is you've got to have three that are bona fide NBA players at the same time, and it's not ever lined up for Mike to have that kind of talent at one time in the right spots on the floor to have a high level of success.
And yeah. what does Cal always get knocked for? His lack of coaching, which I think is a little overblown, but he's able to make up for it because of the type of guys he brings in.
Mm-hmm.
And so talent oftentimes is able to replace not necessarily the top elite coaches, because I don't think either of you guys are going to argue with me that Mike Anderson's not an elite coach, right? I could say that, and that's not getting any blowback or anything.
That he is or isn't?
Isn't an elite
coach.
He's not. Yeah, that's not. Y'all are going to argue that, right?
No.
Against that, right?
No.
Okay. So, while
he's good, not an elite coach, just not in that
tier category of Self.
Correct.
Coach K, Roy
Correct.
Williams and stuff.
Correct.
But you had an elite coach in Nolan Richardson. You had elite players as well. So when you combine those, that's going to lead to success. But when you have good players and good coaching, you're not going to get that same type of success.
Well, I think that's how most people feel right now about Mike Anderson and about the situation that they find themselves in. Is it has nothing to do with the fact that anyone thinks that Mike Anderson's a bad coach or whatnot. You just haven't been able to take that next step. That step that you had with Eddie and Nolan. And that's the thing, is that people see what Arkansas was capable of. Fans see what Arkansas was capable of, and they say, okay, we know we can get there. We know that that's the pinnacle. We know that there is so we can get to a championship caliber style, because that's what we've done in the past. And so until you get to that point, it's all going to be for naught. Because right now, if Mike Anderson doesn't make it to a Sweet 16 or further, no one's going to be satisfied. Right. No one's going to be happy.
Because you've had enough of making the tournament, winning a game, being done.
Yes.
You've had enough of that. You've seen enough of that. You know, it's like running a business when you're breaking even. Man, well, we're not losing money anymore. Think if you're running a business and for 4 or 5 years you lost money, getting a little closer, losing a little less, and you get to break even, 3 out of 4 years. You're tired of breaking even.
Yeah.
I want to take some bread home at the end of the year. And that seems to be kind of where you're at. You just keep breaking even.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to break even.
No, they want to take it to that next level. They want to get to that next step.
And it's like the program, because you've got a tie or a link to the days of Nolan, you still want that the Camelot to be rebuilt here. You want 40 minutes of hell, not the fastest 40 minutes. You want all these things, but no one really wants to accept that the game is different. Nolan did it with suffocating physical defense. That's really how Nolan won. They use defense to create offense, transition points, trapping people. You just can't do those things. The physicality of the game has changed tremendously. And this idea that it's going to look like old hog ball again, it's just not going to happen.
No.
The game's not going to allow it. Because you just can't get right up belly to belly on people like Corey Beck did.
And I've said before,
25 years ago.
I said it before and I'll say it again. If you took that 94 national championship team and just picked them up, placed them in today's game and said
they'd all foul out.
They couldn't play their game. I mean, it's all changed.
Different.
So, I mean, there's a lot of factors that go into it right now.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas. 80 yards.
Let's go to the phone lines. We're now joined by Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Good morning, Tom. How was the weekend, my man?
That was a pretty good weekend, man. We could be all over the map today, as y'all probably know.
Well, you got your wish. We'll just start. You got your wish where the Saints, who is a division foe of your favorite Atlanta Falcons, does not get to the Super Bowl. And I know that's what, when we talked on Thursday, that's the last thing you wanted to see was the Saints go marching in to your stadium in Atlanta.
It would have made me very ill, but I have to say this, as a fan of the game, and by the way, yesterday was just so compelling to be an NFL fan and to have the games come down the way they did in both overtime. It was pretty phenomenal. But here's the thing. It's a black eye a little bit for the league that there was some very egregious blown calls, but everybody's talking about it today. Everybody is talking about the two NFL games. So in a way, it's like the old advertising maxim, you know, any publicity is good publicity. But no, I would have been really ill, but I hated it that a pass interference call as blatant as the one they missed is what put the Rams there. So as I tweeted last night, I'm not going to rub it in any of my Saints buddies and families, fans' faces. It was a bad deal, but I'm happy the Saints aren't playing in Atlanta.
All right, let's start there. We'll get to basketball in a minute because the Hogs lost another one. But so we'll talk about that in a minute. So how would Tom Murphy fix it? I mean, obviously everyone watching knew it was a bad missed call. It was a no call and a pass interference. Everyone's seen it by now. What do you do? How do you fix it? I mean, does there need to be a mechanic or a rule put in place somehow that replay could get involved and essentially throw a flag that didn't get thrown on the field? How would Tom Murphy fix this situation?
Well, I will say this. The sporting world over the last, has it been decade or, you know, so 10, 15 years, has really gotten a lot better at fixing the wrong. And if you open the can of worms where a replay official could come back and make a judgment call, think of how often that would stop the game. And then our arms would really be thrown into the air. Even though, you know, I think my Falcons have been on the wrong end of some things that could have been reviewed, like a bad pass interference call in the playoffs against the Niners we had a few years ago when the Niners went to the Super Bowl. I don't like that idea. So I don't know how you fix the judgment call pass interference without stopping the game too much. Yeah. But I will say the overtime rules, I think the NFL might do itself a favor, even though they adjusted them a few years ago where the team had to score a touchdown to win with the first possession rather than a field goal. I just don't like that Pat Mahomes and the Chiefs never got the ball last night.
And just, nobody does, unless you're a Pace
rankles
fan.
Me. Well, see, so I don't know how you fix. Maybe at some point you go to the college rule and start them on the 30 or the 35. So a long field goal would be, you know, if you don't do anything, you've got a long field goal opportunity from the 35. So I don't know. I would look at that and see if the owners can get on the same page.
Just make sure both teams have a possession. You know, field goal doesn't or an immediate touchdown doesn't win it. You know, they did that like you said with the field goal. You couldn't win it on a field goal. You could win it on a touchdown, at least in the playoffs. If you don't want to change it for regular season because of TV constraints, fine. I don't think you should. I just think you should change it for the whole year. Each team gets an offensive possession. It's that simple.
Yeah, maybe that would be a good playoff rule. And by the way, Tommy, that picture you sent out last night with the "We Got Robbed," were you down in New Orleans or did you get that sent to you?
No, I'm just like everybody. I stole it off the internet. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we know.
They did get robbed, though.
Yeah, yes, yeah. On the for those that don't know what Tom's referencing there, on the digital boards, like you see them along the highways, on the Pontchartrain Causeway, instead of having some kind of message up there about traffic flow or, you know, road construction, it said "We got robbed" on the highway sign. It was awesome.
Yeah, no, that was I remember seeing that picture. And yeah, there was a lot of jokes, a lot of memes that were made from a game like this. And just to kind of piggyback off of the overtime thing that we've been discussing with you, Tom, I have just never seen a game in college football where it went to overtime and then it ended and anyone said, you know what, I wasn't satisfied with the way that ended. I didn't feel like the right team won or anything like that. But in the NFL, I feel like we get that every single year. I don't know if they should adapt the exact same rules as college football, but I feel like college football overtime is so much better than NFL overtime.
Yeah, I love it. And I've covered now so many overtime games in college that are memorable. I mean, they stick with you forever. And Arkansas fans are at the very, very top of the list in memorable OT games. I mean, that's the it's kind of a claim to fame. And my Falcons, you know, we lost the coin flip to the Patriots. And as soon as we lost the coin flip, I knew we were toast. Mm. And it just made me ill to think that we wouldn't get the ball in overtime, much like if you're a Chiefs fan last night. So maybe you start them on the 40, maybe you start them on the 50. So it's not an automatic field goal try. But I bet you it will get talked about. We'll hear some stuff about that in the offseason.
All right, we put it off as long as we can. Arkansas loses on the road at Ole Miss. Another day where Arkansas's best players didn't perform, and Ole Miss, a surging program right now, exposed the Hogs once again, now four straight, Tom.
Yeah, it's pretty rough, and the guys have talked about needing to come out and throw the first punch, but when your offense isn't moving smoothly and you're missing your shots, it's hard to throw the first punch, and that's why Ole Miss jumped out, much like Tennessee jumped out. There's just not a ton of depth, and I know that putting Reggie Chaney in the starting lineup, I thought was a pretty good move by Mike Anderson over Adriel Bailey. But here's the thing: it surprised me a little bit to hear Mike say it looks like maybe our confidence has been shattered, because that's not something you hear from Mike Anderson. It may be very well the truth that, you know, they're not sure how to win games now. But with Missouri coming in, they need to win. They need to win this week. It's a home game, and it would quell some of the, you know, anger from the fans and stuff. And, you know, Arkansas got a road win at A&M, but so did Missouri. Everybody's doing it now. Auburn went down there and did it. So, but look, play comparative scores for a moment. Alabama went in and almost upset Tennessee. I mean, really, that walking call, that could have been the difference in the game. They could have won it. And yet Alabama is the same team that lost at home to an A&M team that Arkansas beat in College Station. So if you play that comparative score game, they could be in these games. And I suspect we'll see a pretty good performance from the Razorbacks when they face Missouri.
Well, and Tom, I know that a lot of fans are so upset that they're just wanting answers. They're wanting changes. They don't want to see this type of basketball and the four-game losing skid happen anymore. But could you just see any scenario, let's just put it out there, any scenario where after the end of this season that Arkansas or Hunter Yurcheck or anybody, they look to make changes, not just saying with Mike Anderson, maybe some assistant coaches, because I don't see any light at the end of the tunnel, because if Gafford leaves after this season, what are you left with? You don't seem like you're really going to have anything that's going to be improved on next season. So, I mean, what kind of scenario could you see playing out where something like that could end up happening?
Well, I tend to give Mike Anderson, he's a loyal Arkansas guy from his assistant days. I tend to give him some slack. He's a clean coach to begin with, and that might be something that isn't talked about a whole lot, that Mike Anderson plays by the rules. And if you look around the conference, around the country, that might not be the case everywhere. But recruiting, you know, they've got to get a big guy in. Clearly, I mean, the door is open for a big guy to come in, and maybe it's a transfer or whatever that could come in and be an integral part of this team. I would think it would take just a pretty good collapse down the stretch for Hunter Yurcheck to consider making a move there. That or, you know, just some, you know, untoward type situations that come up with the team or with Mike Anderson. I don't see that happening, but I think they're going to be more competitive down the stretch, and maybe in a couple, 3 weeks, we're not having this exact conversation.
All right, let's talk a little football. Big recruiting weekend, and I guess Chad Moore showed his variety of skills, not only bringing in recruits and their family, but also being able to salt some sidewalks and driveways too, Tom.
Yeah,
that was a fun story.
He's a handyman, and those are the kind of things that could pay dividends for you, you know, when the social media strikes like that, and you capture it. So they've done a good job with this class, and if they could get some better quarterback play and better offensive line play, maybe they can wrap this class up in good shape and make strides for next year.
Also, Tom, dealing with the recruiting news, it looks like Taylor Edwards, Arkansas's director of recruiting, is leaving to take a job at Maryland. A little surprising to a lot of people. But a lot of people also don't understand the importance of the director of recruiting, kind of the role, the task, the impact that he can have on a recruiting class. What do you know about this situation, and do you think it's going to have a pretty major impact for Arkansas with Chad Morrison his recruiting?
Well, I mean, they've got a pretty good staff in place, but he goes kind of under the radar, I would say, on Taylor Edwards, and the staff there does a great job with their presence online, with the graphics they do. It's a pretty big team too, and I have a feeling they'll find a replacement that allows them to kind of keep going really at the same pace that they had. That's my take on it.
Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, always appreciate you joining us, Tom. Great stuff as always. We'll catch up with you on Thursday, all right?
Yeah, you bet. You go Rams.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod and Ruskin is Ranting podcast on hitthatline.com.